It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So there's all the audio from a glorious day at Arsenal yesterday. Absolutely fantastic. And now, in the cold light of day, the following day, on the Monday, here we are, Peter and I, discussing it in a bit more detail and in slight more sobriety than we were perhaps
yesterday. I don't know what you're insinuating there. I was sober as a judge.
Yes, that's right. So was I.
Might anyway, be a pissed judge, but, you know, it's the judge nonetheless.
Judges do
a lot of judge is still a judge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. What a great day, wasn't it? Arsenal 0, Brighton and Hove Albion 3. Just the quick details. And Ciso on 51 minutes, Undav on 86, and Estupiñán on 96. The assists were Estupiñán for the first one, and then Grosch. And then, of course, it was a giveaway, wasn't it, for the third one? So.
I suppose, technically, wasn't it?
Yeah, possibly, I suppose.
Undav, I suppose, with his shot, wasn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, I guess he could claim an assist there. What really stood out for me was Estupiñán getting his second goal for the Albion, not his first, in my opinion. And that goal was a goal at Palace, simple as that. Anyway, but delighted for him, delighted for Undav, who's chipped it in the net again. What's going on?
Yeah.
It's become his most
definite strength, haven't we?
Yeah,
shipping it over keepers.
But it was a great day out. We were at the Hamilton Brewery pre-match. A great day, sunny weather, having a good chat with a lot of people. We didn't get the NSK guys on in the end. They were a bit reticent to come on for some reason, so a bit disappointing, but maybe get them on another time. But there was a load of us there, quite a few Brighton fans. A beer festival, which we narrowly avoided. That could have got really messy, I think. 10 quid drinkers.
Yeah, I think might not have seen the game.
We did well enough as it was. It's good to see you as well on a match day. We don't do it often enough, do we, I suppose? So quite often you've got other stuff going on. But it was good to meet up with you and various other people. And then onto the game, a nice brisk walk to the Emirates and into the grounds, a nice sunny day. And I love the Arsenal Stadium, actually. I think it's such a nice environment, such a nice...
Definitely helps that we have some pretty good results there.
Yeah, it certainly does, yeah. But, I mean, just aesthetically, I think it's a really good ground. They do actually make some noise now, which they didn't for many years.
The Ashburton, whatever they're called.
Ashburton Arses or something.
Yeah. Ashburton Aardvarks or something like that. I can't remember what it was now. It does begin with A. It's very alliterative.
Yeah. And completely forgettable by all accounts because we can't remember what it is. But
I remember it was Ashburton something.
Yeah,
so that makes sense. Step up for not remembering at all.
Yeah, Ashburton Grove, of course, the site that the stadium was built on. I'm surprised. It's been the Emirates since the beginning, isn't it? So it's a little bit like us with Thalma and Amex. It's just they're always going to refer to it by the sponsored
Ashburton name. Army. There we are.
Ashburton Army, not arses. Ashburton Army.
The arsey alphabet, Ashburton Army.
Actually, I don't mind that. That's a bit original, isn't it? It's a little bit better than just the Arsenal boys or something, you know, the usual kind of crap. But,
the Arsenal Ultras.
Yes, which would be a little bit bland. Anyway, that's enough about that. On to the game. So 3-0, all the goals, as we've just mentioned, they were in the second half. Let's talk about
up our end.
at our end, which was great. And actually, Arsenal were certainly the better side, I thought, in the first half. They definitely are having a lot more of it in that game, in that half of the game. And of course, Leandro...
Although Enciso's chance was arguably the best one of the half, I think, probably.
Yeah. That's true, yeah. I mean, that was a long ball. Was it Colwell who played that ball?
Yeah, a long ball from Colwell, and really well played by Mitoma. He completely did Ben White down to the flank.
Yeah,
and
I mean, then, what, 90-yard pass, was it, or something?
Yeah.
And then he skins him, and then, yeah, and Enciso just had that great shot, didn't he? Just really fired it off. It's typical him. He tends to do this, doesn't he? He's very direct in terms of his actual end product, which is great. He doesn't mess around. He's got a real hunger for goals. I think he's such a good player. And he fired a shot off, and it was pretty dangerous. I would say it's almost a better version of the McNeil goal scored against us earlier in the week, ironically. Similar sort of position. It was probably might have hit the bar, might have gone in off the bar, hard to tell, but it was tipped over. And that was our best chance, and probably the best chance of the first
time. I was thinking of the other one, that was the other one. I was thinking of when Mitoma beat White and then Enciso put it over at the far post.
Oh, that one.
Yeah.
I mean, because somebody, I think it was a goalkeeper, got touched, didn't he? And I think...
There was two different Enciso chances. That's where we're getting confused.
Yeah. So that's the one you're talking about. He's reaching behind him a bit, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think it was quite as good a chance as it could have been, actually, because of that touch from the defender or goalkeeper.
Yeah, Ramsdale did well to get a touch on it, but still it was... I think he still should have done better with it, really.
Oh, I don't know. I think that's harsh from Marsh, actually, a little bit. I know the commentator said the same as you. They said that was a golden opportunity. But, I mean, unless he could have a bit more time to set himself, I'm not sure. I think that's always hard to keep down when you're stretching behind yourself slightly. But he's the kind of player that you think might be able to do that, though, as well. He's pretty good. So we had those two chances at the other end of the field, our end. Leandro Trossbar was back again, wasn't he? He's hit the bar again. It's just something about him and Brighton. You know, he had the 3-in-1 game against Man United. I think he hit the bar 5 or 6 times that season, didn't he, or something like that. 6 or 7 times, maybe. And it was a good shot, actually. Just over, just brushed the top of the bar.
And actually took a deflection off Grosch. Grosch did really well with it. But looking at the match of the day and the highlights and the live recording, but didn't get a corner for it. They didn't, but Grosch did really well with it. I have to say, though, I thought Trossard did better for us yesterday than he did the last 3 games he played for us. So he contributed more to the Albion with that assist yesterday than...
Yes, he gave the ball away, of course, for the 3rd goal, wasn't it, I think? Second goal, yeah, the second goal. The chip, with delightful chip. I can't remember the exact chronology, but there were 2 or 3 incidents in the game which were talking points. First of all, there was the challenge on Mitoma, which would have been in the first half, where essentially Martinelli, as he's going for the ball, Mitoma's going for the ball. They're both looking at the ball, but essentially what happens is Mitoma's totally taken out. He's completely poleaxed by the drifting kind of lunging body of Martinelli, who's sort of gone airborne and then just let himself just crash into Mitoma. And some people said, no, it's just coming together. They both had eyes on the ball. And I think, I didn't quite catch it, but I think Dermot Gallagher has kind of excused it and said that was no more than the yellow. It wasn't given as a yellow, of course. It was.
Yeah. I've not seen anyone say it was just a coming together. I've seen people say maybe it was a yellow and others say it was a red. I actually think probably whatever the referee goes for doesn't get overturned there. I don't think if you're given a red on the pitch, I don't think that gets overturned, to be honest. It was a nasty tackle from Martinelli, and then Arsenal fans moaning about, you know, kind of like the tackle on from Casado on Martinelli. That was a pretty average tackle. Yeah, his ankle went at an awkward angle as a result of it, but that wasn't down to what Casado did. No. He kind of came in, he had every right to go for the ball there, and then it was, to me, it wasn't a booking, whereas Martinez was an absolutely guaranteed booking. And that's pretty much what they said on Match of the Day. They said it was a yellow card verging on red for Martinelli and then possibly a yellow, but probably not for Casado. There's absolutely no way you can book Casado having let Martinelli get away with what he did.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
I thought he let a lot go, and then Stupinian got booked for nothing, basically. It wasn't even a foul, I don't think, what he got booked for.
Completely agree with that. I mean, the reffing wasn't brilliant in this game. I think with that Martinelli incident, I think that was pretty nasty because I think that was premeditated. Yes, he did have his eyes on on the ball largely, but he knew where Mittimer was and he deliberately allowed himself to drift into that position, knowing he wasn't going to get the ball. He still just went full in and just cluttered him. Well, basically, his side about halfway up, wasn't it? Made contact.
How they got to 80 minutes without a booking is beyond me. There was another one on McAllister where they caught him, one of them, their players caught him really late and ended up with Grosh kicking the ball out for their throw. And then they basically put, kind of, when we had the ball completely in our own half, completely free, they then kind of kicked it out of play for a throw and then pressured us into losing the ball. And I thought it's not particularly good sportsmanship from Arsenal, to be honest, They basically, rather than giving it to us back in the situation that we had it, when it was originally, we were giving treatment because of a foul by one of their players, which was actually quite a nasty tackle and should have been booked for. They instead of that, we kind of ended up being pressed back into our own half because they basically cheated effectively. And it's,
The other thing is that I thought, certain niggly situations as well. I don't think the refereeing was appalling, but it wasn't great. Arsenal sportsmanship, you said, not great in that incident as well.
I think Madley with his refereeing set the tone with that, letting Martinelli get away with that, because it kind of led to a few probably slightly naughty challenges from both sides that maybe, there were a few where people got stuck in more than they would have done but having seen that kind of that challenge get away with it, they were like, well, actually, I know they say referees don't really want to book players early, but I mean that when they do that, you should book him early.
Yeah.
At the very least, it was arm first. It was a really nasty tackle. And to be honest, I find it quite funny that Martinelli ended up going off injured. It serves him right.
Well, it does really, doesn't it? Because he escaped in one way and then he doesn't in the other way. I think that's poetic justice of a sort, isn't it? To some degree, at least. Just talking about the lineup, by the way, because we obviously had this concern, particularly at right back and therefore by extension, maybe in midfield as well. We started with obviously stealing goal. We had Caicedo playing as right back again with Duncan Colwill central, Estupiñán on the left. So Grosh and Gilmore were the deeper lying midfielders and then McAllister playing further forward in the number 10 role of his shirt, really. But interestingly as well, we started with then Ciso on the left and Mittimer, unusually, on the right-hand side. And then Ferguson was back in for a start as well up front. And we did change it round in terms of Mittimer and then Ciso as the game wore on, swapped it back round. So Mittimer was then able to hassle Ben White on that side of the pitch. And I think he had a lot of success on that side as the game wore on, which was great to see. But Caicedo, I thought, played better in this right-back role yesterday than he did in the previous occasion, which was the...
United game, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, United game, that's right. Yeah.
I thought he played pretty well then as well, to be fair. So.
Yeah, he did. And I thought he was absolutely outstanding in this game. I think there was a number of outstanding performances. Caicedo, Estupiñán and Colwill were all superb. I thought Gilmore had another good game. And obviously Mittimer looked more sharp and a little bit more himself, I think. And Ciso had an excellent game. There was a lot of bite and typical stuff from McAllister. I thought that all those players had really good games. Steele as well. In the first half, there was one chance, actually, which could have been dangerous, even though Gabriel Jesus took it wide. He had to shoot in from a bit of a tight angle, but Steele got his foot down really flat and his leg down, sorry, really flat and quick to block out what could have sneaked in, actually, via the near post, or could have deflected in, a la the... the game we don't want to talk about from Monday. So good performances all round, I thought. And that first half, I think we just needed to weather it. We needed to get through it, didn't we? And that was going to be the key. Mm. And once we did that, I was confident that we could go on from there. And as I said to you before the game in our preview part of our last podcast, I felt confident we could get a result here. It's just the case that when we have got adversity, when we have got players out, So look at the Wolves game as another example. We've managed to come good despite those weaknesses. And I know Wolves are awful, but we still, the level.
Look at the excuses Arsenal seem to be offering of like, oh, Saliba's out seems to have like completely screwed their whole season. One player basically is being out. And we had eight out yesterday.
Exactly.
I don't understand. You have Zinchenko and Saliba were the only ones, I think, of their whole squad who are out.
Yeah.
And that's mentioned as well. Saliba gets mentioned all over and that sort of thing. No one mentioned the fact that we had so many players out. I mean, Sanchez, you can't, it's hard to count because he probably wouldn't have played. But then, lots of players, Veltman would have started. Lallana probably would have started if fit.
Yeah.
Sarmiento would have been offered an option off the bench.
And Solly.
Webster may have started, although Colwill had a fantastic game, I thought. Yeah. Lamptey, if fit, would have started in this team probably because we didd't have a right back.
And Solly.
Solly definitely would have started.
Yeah.
So you know, that's seven. And there's someone else as well I'm missing as well. Oh, Modder, of course, who, yeah, we've missed all season. So, you know, it's like, it's all very well with, you know, the big clubs. It's like we've had that both times before with Arsenal. You know, when we won there in the League Cup, there was all the talk that they made nine changes, but no one mentioned that we made seven or eight. And when we played them at Christmas, there was all the talk of Jesus being out and then swapping their fullbacks out. But after an hour, there was no talk of us having five players out, six players out.
Hmm. And then on to, the second half. So we got the better of them. We got that goal through... through NC. So first of all, it was a break down the left-hand side and Estupiñán got in and he kind of did that knocking down and up kind of shot, which actually was how he scored his goal as well later on. He kicked it into the ground, bounced over the defender, and so it appeared low but not too low for NC, so to kind of slightly angle his header past the goalie, right in on goal. Beautiful. And his
And then we all waited for VAR to get involved because Arsenal were moaning about it. And...
yeah, I got a bit nervous there because the Arsenal players sort of were clustered around and the referee sort of walked over to them and stood there with them for a moment. And I wondered what's going on here? I hadn't really looked to see if there was an offside or a foul or anything like that. Was that the one where the Arsenal defender went down?
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Was it Gabriel? I can't remember who.
Kivor, his name is, Polish guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, there was like, I think Micah Richards on the Sky coverage was saying it was a foul and everyone else was laughing at him pretty much. It was ludicrous. Just how on earth anyone can think it was a foul? Basically, Gabriel shoved Ferguson towards Kivor and he basically went down with absolutely no, you know, he's so weak. And yeah, it was ridiculous. If that had been given as a free kick, then it would have been crazy.
And if he was faking it or exaggerating it, then I would have a word with him if I was the manager because he was quite close to where the goal occurred.
Yeah.
So
no, absolutely. He should have stayed in his feet. And he clearly was fine. There was no problem afterwards. He carried on. It was, Ferguson, if anything, got shoved into him by Gabriel. So, well, maybe Gabriel shouldn't be shoving players around as well in the area if you're going to look for a real culprit. And Enciso, as a result, had a really free header. And... it was great. And and then I think halfway through the guy getting treated, the referee confirmed it was all fine. And felt like it was going to be a long 40 minutes plus injury time at that point. And then, obviously the last 10 minutes were made a lot easier by what happened afterwards.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We were leading for quite a while at 1-0. And as you said, that we kept looking up at that scoreboard. Now, I'm strangely quite relaxed about how we are in these situations. You know, a couple of years ago, I would have been thinking, oh, we won 1-0 up at Arsenal. God, please let us hold on to this. And, you know, however we play the game, us as fans were going to be nervous, whatever was going on the pitch. All the time it's 1-0. I felt strangely relaxed about it. Not that I didn't think Arsenal could score, but somehow it just felt as if,
they didn't have loads of chances, did they? And it was, I think the big thing from their point of view, especially once it went to 2-0, was a draw really didn't mean that much. To them, you know, it was, you know, one point wasn't going to make any difference.
Yeah.
Exactly. Once we score the second, with 4 minutes left, you think, well, with 8 minutes of injury time, if you get one, you might get a second, but the odds of getting a third in that time as well, and so they're kind of, I mean, they looked pretty half-hearted at 1-0, to be honest. I mean, they didn't really look like they thought they were going to score. There was one shot from Reece Nelson, which fizzed across the goal, which I think still had covered anyway, because from that angle, it's really hard to beat a keeper from that angle. Because the ball has to go, they have to really have left their post open at the angle it was going at, even if it creeps in the corner. And other than that, they didn't really offer that much. There was a few scrambles and a few bits and pieces, but we were well on top a lot for quite a lot of that time. And then, it was a brilliant finish from under a brilliant assist from Trossard. I was there.
Yeah, gave it away nicely. I mean, he just sort of just squared it straight into the path of our guys.
It was a lazy flick, wasn't it? It didn't look like a flick that really had any sort of... I'm not sure what he was even aiming for, what they thought he'd achieve by doing it deep in his own half like that. It was a very Trossard-esque play, to be honest.
It was very...
with it.
Very casual, and it cost them. And Undav gets the ball, chips it. There was an inconsequential touch from the goalkeeper as well, I think, by the looks of it. But it really didn't change the trajectory much. And I think it was going in either way round. And so very much Undav's goal. Chipped it over. And you think that looks like that's going to drop just in. That's great. just you just wait for a second for the final confirmation as you see where it bounces, and you think absolutely fantastic. The game is won, and just fantastic, isn't it? Superb. And then, of course, we get the third goal as well. Estupiñán gets officially his first goal for the club, but of course, we all know that's not the case. It's his second one after that Palace incident. Yeah. And again, he kicked it into the ground. The ball would bounce free to him. He kicked it into the ground, and it bounced up over the goalkeeper's outreaching arm and into the corner of the net.
A couple of things in the build-up to that. Firstly, brilliant challenge from Caicedo in the area on Nketiah. When Nketiah was basically trying to get a penalty and Caicedo didn't fall for it and went round him and won the ball clearly, and it flicked through to Steele. And secondly, Undav did brilliantly to hold it up initially and kind of hold up about three of their players and turn away to set Welbeck away, who then turned the favour to him in order for him to shoot. Yeah. Ramsdale should have done better really with it, as they saw the match today. It wasn't the greatest shot ever, but I don't think any of us care. So.
Exactly, yeah.
And I mean, at that point, it was 2-0 with 96 minutes on the clock. It wasn't going to, even if we hadn't scored that, it wasn't going to be it was a nice icing on the cake, but we'd won already by that. We'd seen off that attack previously, I think, which was the end of the game, basically. I mean, they weren't going to score two goals in 2 minutes or whatever, effectively.
Yeah, and also, it just pulls the goal difference back a little bit after what happened on Monday, which is quite pleasing and unexpected.
Yeah, it wasn't dangerous dropping away from towards like the mid-teens, that's going to be just awful after, we've had such a good goal difference every year so far.
Yes, exactly. Only other thing I was going to mention really with the game itself was also just a fantastic atmosphere. And just at the end as well, when the players came over to applaud the fans and De Zerbi went mad, it was great. Loads of good fist pumping gestures from him. But I love the way Undav very slowly and purposefully walked all the way over to what I'm going to guess was maybe relatives that are in the front or near the front of the stand. And he was getting greeted and hugged by a bunch of supporters there. It looked like, I think it was Paul Samra, wasn't it, that was at the front as well next to them. It looked like him. As seen on TV. But superb, great atmosphere. I videoed the third goal as well. I happened to, I had a hunch there was a goal coming managed to get that one. So I'll have to pop that out on social media once I finally caught up with the weekend's WhatsApping. It was superb. And the BBC report, by the way, said this was another statement win in what looks like being a history-defining season for Brighton, who bounced back from a crushing 5-1 home defeat by Everton to produce one of their best performances of the season. They were at their clinical best as Arsenal were beaten at the Emirates for only the second time in the league. Roberto De Zerbi has called on his players to quote, write club history, end quote, by qualifying for Europe for the first time. De Zerbi said, it's not enough to qualify for the Europa League. We have four games and they're all tough games. We have 58 points and that's not enough. We have to win other games, and first game will be in Newcastle on Thursday. I enjoy working with the players. I'm very lucky to be their coach, and I'm happy that they enjoy working with me. That's a great satisfaction for me, but I prefer to speak about everything at the end of the season because we want to achieve something historic for the fans and for the club.
It's funny, when I first read that quote, I thought he meant the Europa League's not enough for him. And I was like, he was still thinking about the Champions League. And then I realised what he actually meant was there's not enough points currently to.
Yes.
But the stat that I was impressed me was that I heard was three of the last four teams to win at the Emirates are us.
Yes, and it's just us and Man City that have won. Actually, we both won twice at the Emirates this season because they knocked them out of the FA Cup, we knocked them out of the League Cup, and then obviously both sides won their fixtures at the Emirates in the league.
It's still pretty impressive.
It's a great stat, isn't it? And speaking of stats, the overall match stats were pretty comprehensively impressive in our favour as well. We had more possession than they did, which again is
significantly more.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. We had
59, wasn't it, or something?
59% possession, yeah. They had 14 shots to our 12, but we had 6 on target to their 2. That's fantastic, isn't it? Superb. I just love this performance. I love this. The way the team were. I love this. The goal celebration, by the way, the third goal, De Zerbi sliding on his knees
in
a pair of trousers. So you think, oh dear, that's going to be a replacement needed. I don't know if they were.
Apparently, Martin Keown was moaning about that on Talk Sport today, along with moaning about the fact that Arsenal had to play after Man City and that meant they were like down, and moaning about this and moaning about that. And it's like, really?
Well, it's fixture scheduling. It's like that, isn't it? It's always going to be like that.
It's not the last game of the season, you know. It's like literally, it's still like we've still got four games to go.
Yeah, it works the other way as well, doesn't it? If for example, Arsenal were still several points better off and they were still like the slight favourite or had it in their hands, there's more pressure on Man City in a different sort of way there, isn't there?
Yeah, it's all ridiculous. You know, some of these things, he was just kind of complaining about all sorts of stuff and, they were just taking a piss out of him, I think, on TalkSport, stop being an idiot.
Well, we had to play on Monday and they didn't have to play on Monday, do they? So we can talk about that if you want. I can't be doing with that. It really irritates me. But lots more praise all over the place from various quarters after this performance. There was also a good interview, by the way, on Sky on their Sunday supplement or whatever it is. 10 o'clock I think it was 11 o'clock actually in the morning on Sunday pregame, which I recorded and watched later. Which was quite a nice little interview. Melissa Reddy talking to De Zerbi there, and that was good as well. Lots of good coverage again, and. I think plenty of praise all round. Had some messages from Spurs fans saying thanks for that. Arsenal fans, I think were the ones I've spoken to have been fairly gracious about it. And they said, better team won on the day in the end. I haven't heard anyone moaning about decisions, but I'm sure there's plenty out there that are. But overall, a fantastic day out, fantastic result. Things are back on track now, Peter. We now are in pole position, but it's, as De Zerbi's alluded to, we've still got a bit of work to do at the moment.
Yeah, Newcastle feels like a little bit of a free hit now, in a way. Yeah. If we could get the result there, then it's almost done. Yeah. If we can't, then the big thing for me is we don't get any more injuries, or we don't, we maybe tweak things a little. I wouldn't start Ferguson on Thursday. I'd attempt to start Welbeck instead, just because he's just back from injury, and we'll need him for Southampton. That's the one. I mean, on paper, that should be enough to get it. Yeah. Villa, if in order for us to win against Southampton and not get into Europe at all, then Villa would have to win at Liverpool, which would be. Yeah. So if we can get that one win, City now hopefully as well will have nothing to play for. If they could beat Madrid and beat Chelsea, then they'll have other priorities and already have won the league, which would be a real added bonus of yesterday.
And also, not particularly... on top of which, I don't want Man United to win the FA Cup. So I would like them to be in the best position they can be for that match, Man City, as well. And in fact, it would be quite amusingly irritating for Man U fans if City do the treble. So I'm fully on board with City doing that now that we know where the title's
going. And I think the least they can do is rest most of their team and play their under-12s against us after we basically handed them the league. It's like,
Yeah, absolutely.
They've probably got some sort of spectacular goal scorer in their under-12s as well who end up scoring or something.
Yeah. Well, City now... Martin Keown can't complain because Arsenal are playing before City this weekend.
They'll probably complain about that too, though, somehow,
There's more pressure on them somehow. But yeah, essentially the situation with the title now is Man City have 85 points, Arsenal have 81, City have 3 games left, Arsenal have 2 left. So essentially, Arsenal, if they fail to beat... if they fail to beat Forest, or it might be if they
City have to match Arsenal's result, basically. In effect, a draw would do it, but not mathematically. From an Arsenal draw would do it, but they'd be 3 points behind with one game left, so they technically could catch them, but the goal difference about 20. So in reality, given City won't lose by any of those 3 games, Arsenal would have to probably win about 10-0 or something, or 15-0.
And if Forest beat Arsenal, then the title's City's before they played on the Sunday. Yeah. Looking further down the table, after Arsenal, there's a 15-point gap to Newcastle and Man United with 66 points each. Liverpool and 3 games to play each. Liverpool, also with 3 to play, have 62 points in 5th place. We're now back up to 6th. 4 behind Liverpool with a game in hand on them, 4 to play, 58. And we are a point ahead of Spurs and Villa, which is very, very delightful, who have 57.
And with a significantly better goal difference as well.
Exactly. And two games in hand on both teams. And for what it's worth, Brentford are 4 points further back. They've got another good win at the weekend.
So when you think about the fact that we should have got a point against Villa because we should have had a penalty, and we should have had 3 points at Spurs. You turn those two results around only, even if you ignore all the other trickery and travesties this season, if you turn those two results around and we have 4 more points and Villa have 2 fewer and Spurs had 3 fewer, we'd be in Europe comfortably now.
Yeah. One final thing on the table. If Fulham get a draw, Chelsea are pretty much guaranteed to be bottom half of the table, guaranteed. Yeah. They've got 3 games left and they're 8 points behind Fulham, who are the next side.
Also, yesterday's result officially confirmed we've got our level highest position ever.
Which last year
we got on the we were about 80 minutes in the last game of the season. We kind of jumped back up to ninth, wasn't it? And this season we've got it with four games to go.
Yeah, is that right though? Because Brentford on 53, two games.
Fulham can't overtake us though. So Fulham attempts, so we're guaranteed at least ninth, which is our level highest.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, Brentford would have to win both to overtake us because their goal difference is pretty dire as well.
The table's looking great. And you know, they have that form thing where they show the last six games. It's significant how much more green for win there is in the top six than there is just below it. Spurs have had loss, loss, draw, loss, win, loss. Villa have had win, draw, win, loss, loss, win. And Brentford have had loss, draw, win, win, loss, win. So it's kind of more sketchy form amongst the other sides.
And Spurs go to Leeds last game. That's not a place... be a tough place to go last game of the season.
They're in double figures on tough place to go quotes now this season.
one of our favourite places to go anyway, but I imagine if Leeds have to win to stay up, that'll be quite an atmosphere and probably quite... Seeing as Spurs aren't exactly the most, how shall I put it, the most on form or confident team currently.
Yeah, exactly. And
hopefully... whatever result it is, means Spurs aren't in Europe. Actually, I'm not quite sure whether I want... in some ways, I'd rather Villa miss out and Spurs get seventh because Spurs will be pissed off about being only seventh and Villa will be happy to come seventh. And so they'd both be annoyed. So in a way, it'd be more funny if Spurs nick seventh from Villa and Spurs are fed up because they don't want to be in the Conference League. But on the other hand, it might mean Spurs win the trophy, which would be like the first time in about 50 years or something.
Yeah, well, I don't begrudge them enough to care about that too much. Apart from Kane, obviously.
I've definitely not been looking at who's like fifth or sixth in the league in various leagues in Europe, or whatever, and trying to work out who the Europa League might be.
Yeah.
Very much changed my view since Friday. I did not see that coming. I mean, but it's only Albion, isn't it? When you look at the last eight games, the roller coaster we've been on just in the last eight games. And you're like, Spurs away, the kind of anger of Spurs away, then the ecstasy of winning at Chelsea for the first time ever, then the pain of losing that late on against United in penalties, the way we capitulated at Forest, but then stuffing Wolves and the emotion of beating United in the last minute, and then the kind of come down to earth and the deflation of Everton, and then Saturday, Sunday. It's like, there's no flat end to a flat promotion to Albion.
It's just basically
either you're up on top of the world or down at the bottom, basically. Yeah, it was like...
this really is the closest to a roller coaster by definition. Yeah.
Even a roller coaster doesn't go up and down just every single second. They do have bits where it's a bit flat at a time, but we seem to just be,
we've gone up and down like Homer Simpson's hairstyle with those little strands of hair. Zig, zig, zig. Anyway, bottom of the table, bit of a different story. Southampton's relegation confirmed before we kicked off that. Done and dusted. They've now lost.
It sounded like they capitulated a bit against Fulham. Whether being down already will take the pressure off or whatever, but it sounds like against Fulham they were awful from what I heard.
They had a correctly disallowed goal, I think, initially, but then they went down, was it 2-0 in the end, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. They've
lost four in a row, five of their last six. They've had a terrible season. I think it's been coming, to be honest. And maybe it'll do them some good in a way to actually have... I know it often isn't the case that teams can bounce straight back, although Burnley did. But I think even if they're down for a couple of seasons, I think it might be a reset that works well for them. Who knows?
There'll be a club that will come back again. I mean, I think at some point we will go down again. There's no kind of like from my side that we'll always be in the Premier League. Yeah. It might be 10 years, it might be 5 years, it might be 20 years. But the reality is that, the way we're run, it's almost impossible to get it right all the time. And, it's also not putting us off a situation where you're desperately, you're financially screwed if you do go down as well. That's the kind of big thing. That's where I think someone like Leicester might really struggle and Everton, especially if they went down. The overpaid older players who actually aren't going to get contracts like they've got at their club anymore. So stay around and don't really contribute to the Championship, but are on really high wages. That's the problem. If you've got... Southampton have got a relatively young, hungry squad. They should do okay, I think. And if they sell players, they'll get reasonable money for them. And if they can't sell them, then they'll be able to keep them. And hopefully they'll want to show what they can do.
Yeah, you're right. And look at the table, by the way. It's Southampton 24 points with two to play. Leicester 30 with three to play. They're playing tonight as we speak, but that's into Liverpool. So not looking.
Would be nice, doubly nice if they could beat them. Actually, because I still think we can catch Liverpool, and also it would increase the chances of a certain team you're about to mention going down.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, Southampton 24, Leicester 30, Leeds with two games left, 31. They got a good draw against Newcastle, but that didn't help them out of the relegation zone. They're still a point behind Everton, who, of course, lost. It's Sean Dyche does us every year, but actually Pep does Sean Dyche every year.
Yeah.
3-0 comfortable win. In fact, that's a lower score than usual for Pep against Sean Dyche teams. Everton, a point clear on 32, and they've got two to play as well. And Forest, another 2 points ahead on 34.
I'm hoping that if Leicester could get a win or two, then Leeds and Everton go, partly because they're both northern and it's a bit more of a journey than Leicester and Forest, given Burnley and Sheffield United already are coming up and Middlesbrough and Sunderland in the playoffs. We don't want really more northern teams, partly because I don't want to play Dyche again next season because we always struggle against his teams. And also partly because I think, well, Leeds, you know, my views on anyway. And I think Everton deserve to go down. They've been down the bottom so often the last few years and they've just about scraped survival. You feel that, you know, in a way they deserve to get relegated.
Yeah, well, apart from Arsenal, Everton are the longest-serving team in consecutive flight seasons. I think it's something like 90 or 95 seasons, something crazy like that. And on that subject, actually, Southampton, their 11-year period has come to an end.
Everton, yeah, they went up our first year at the Amex, didn't they?
Yeah, Everton would be decades. Back-to-back promotions, wasn't it, Saint? Everton would be decades if they went, and Leicester have been there longer than we have as well. So we would go up the table of current consecutive top flight sides as well. We've already improved that with Saints going down, but that could get even better. It could be Leicester and Everton. We could have three teams we go above in that list, if so to speak.
Yeah, there's some interesting games last game of the season. Everton have got Bournemouth home, which on the paper would be pretty winnable. You know, you'd fancy them to win that. Leeds are home to Spurs, will be mentioned. Leicester home to West Ham, which, you know, again, West Ham may be on the beach. West Ham have got quite a big say in relegation, actually, because they've got Leeds home at the weekend and then Leicester away.
Yeah.
So hopefully they beat Leeds and while they've still got a mathematical chance of going down and then relax after that and lose to Leicester. And then who are the other ones? I'm thinking of Forest at Palace. So they've all got kind of teams who might not have that much to play for. Mm. But then Palace seem to be able to get away with linking into a topic we're going to discuss. Palace seem to get away with doing whatever they want, don't they? Punching players and that sort of thing.
Yes. Can I just very quickly mention one thing, actually? AFC Bournemouth, if Leicester don't win against Liverpool, Bournemouth will be mathematically safe because they're 8 points ahead of Leeds with two to play. They're nine ahead of Leicester at the moment, with Leicester having three to play. So, that might be interesting.
I mean, they are safe anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, let's moan about this Palace situation. So what happened in this game was, I don't know which stage of the match it was, but Anderson, their defender...
It was 0-0 at the time.
0-0. So it's 0-0 in a game that Palace went on to win 2-0. I'm pretty sure would not have gone on to win 2-0 if they're down to 10 men. They bloody well should have been. They get away with this over and over again. The number of times Zaha's got away with stuff. Other players as well. And on this occasion, Anderson is there defending a set piece, I think it is. One of the players, who was it that was...
Lerma, wasn't it?
Lerma's there with him, and there's a bit of movement and jostle, and then suddenly Anderson decides to clench his fist and then do a snidey punch in the face, not full, you know, full jab, but he sort of a little mini jab in the face, with a clenched fist, and he's made contact completely out of the blue, unexpected by his opponent, breaks his nose, and apparently that's fine. They looked at it on VAR and they decided it was absolutely fine. The fact he's breaking his nose with a clenched fist tells you that it's not fine.
If they sack the likes of Lee Mason and that sort of thing after VAR decisions, that's as bad a VAR decision as I've seen. I don't understand how you can look at that incident. I understand the referee missed it because it was all a bit of a melee and that sort of thing. And it's literally what VAR has been brought in for. And he obviously did it and hard enough to break Lerma's nose. How he gets away, this isn't because Palace are our rivals. It's because it's such a poor decision. I don't understand how he got away with it. It's bizarre.
Absolutely outrageous, in my opinion. The one thing, I've only seen the incident close in, so I'm assuming that Palace were defending were they in that scenario?
I can't remember. But it wouldn't have been a penalty anyway. I don't think the ball was in play, so it wouldn't have been a foul. I don't think it's a penalty either, or a free kick either way. The ball wasn't in play. It was just while they were kind of like pushing around and shoving in the build-up. But yeah, he just literally just punched in the face. And it's, what is VAR doing? What is the purpose of VAR? If you can't spot that, I don't know who the VAR was at that game. But yeah, it was a dreadful decision or non-decision. And yeah, I don't know how long they looked at it or what they did, but whether they thought it wasn't that strong a punch or something. But I mean, it clearly was, because it broke his nose. And in all honesty, it doesn't matter whether he's tapped him on the nose. He still put his fist towards his nose, just gone and tapped it.
You're not allowed to raise a hand to an opponent. That is a bookable or send-offable offence, depending on the...
It's a red card straight away, even if you hardly touch them. I mean, Shane Duffy, when he headbutted, allegedly, Van Aanholt, I'm pretty sure barely touched him. But it's a red card because you can't move your head towards someone, as Kyle Walker should have been sent off in the semi-final of the FA Cup as well when we played City. You know, and the difference is Jahan Mac didn't make a meal of it, and it was City. So that was the big two differences. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, what if Duffy barely touched Van Aanholt, I'm pretty sure, but he still got a red card.
And what if this Anderson incident, if that's a crucial game, you know, it's not going to be a different decision because it's a crucial game or not. It's just going to be a bad decision in any game. And if it happens to be a crucial game, that I'd be fuming. Right. I'd be absolutely fuming even more if my team. Yeah, disgraceful.
And also every game is crucial because if you look at the prize money, the difference between 11th and 15th, and those teams are all pretty close. Bournemouth win that. They actually aren't that far behind Palace or in and around Palace, and they might overtake them and they could finish 12th, 11th, which would get them another probably 6, 7 million compared to finishing 15th or 14th.
Which is a big amount for a club with
yeah, exactly. So it is all still, just because it's mid-table and there's not much to go, neither team really is going to go down, doesn't mean it's not crucial in the sense of money. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's even if it's a relevant game and both teams are stuck in the same position, still punched him in the face. It's stupid. I mean, yeah. I don't know if the FA can look back and retrospectively ban him now they know that Jefferson Lerma's broken his nose. Because, you know, what on earth they must be thinking looking at that. Then PGML must be, I don't know, what are they going to apologise to Bournemouth? I don't know. Surely they will.
Well, they should do. But Dermot Gallagher, Sky-based referees apologists, didn't think it was enough for a sending off. Well, let's just punch you in the nose, see how you like it.
What's his logic for that? If you raise your hand to someone's face, it's a red card. It's a fact. That's a rule. I don't understand. What was his logic?
Yeah.
Did he not know that Lerma broke his nose?
He must have done. Well, they're talking about it, I think, on there. I only caught a bit of it, actually. So apologies if I've got that wrong. But from what I understand, he was saying that it was one of those ones. I think he said if it was given, it wouldn't be overturnable. But it wasn't, if it wasn't given, it shouldn't be overturned.
If that's not a clear and obvious error, then I don't know what is.
Well, can I just say, poetic justice. Well, last time we had a podcast was the night that Sheffield Wednesday were about to kick off in their playoff semi-final. And I cannot tell you how amused I was
with
the fact that they pushed hard for automatic promotion. Two teams were just that little bit better than them. They were unlucky with a very high points total to miss out on the automatic promotion places. But it is what it is. They had to go into the playoffs. And being as they pushed themselves so hard, they were a bit tired. They're maybe not at their best. And a team that had just snuck in at the last moment, not undeservingly, but by a thin whisker of a margin, Peterborough, played them home advantage, obviously, to the lower ranked team first game at Peterborough's London Road, 4-0. Absolutely love it. And that is the absolute epitome of poetic justice, isn't it, really, that one? Anyway, 4-0, superb score there from our point of view. Really enjoying that. I'm not sure if it's going to be decisive yet. I think it probably will be. So the worst of luck to Wednesday in the return game. But that's a classic comeuppance moment. It was rather marvellous, wasn't it, Peter?
It was, yeah, very funny. And the irony is, Peterborough, it wasn't even like the Wednesday playoff, because that one, we had a massively tough game in Middlesbrough, whereas Wednesday rested their whole team because they were playing. Whereas Peterborough had to play their whole team. They had a tough game at Barnsley last week.
That's true, actually, yeah, to be honest.
So it wasn't even like Peterborough rested their whole team. They had to go to Barnsley and win and hope. And the irony is, hope Wednesday beat Derby.
Yeah. Yes. And Wednesday, there was a clip of Wednesday fans mocking Derby after beating them and causing Derby to miss out on the playoffs, saying, you've screwed up or staying down or something like that. And, no sooner do they do. Well, when will people ever learn? Don't mock, because it'll come back to haunt you, often very quickly indeed. The only annoying thing for me was I actually was going to put a bet on 4-0 when it was 2-0 at half time. And I was about to have dinner and I didn't get around to doing it. And watched the rest of the game and thought, oh, bugger. They've only gone and done it 4-0. The other ones are a lot tighter. I won't go into detail. We'll wait till we see the conclusion of matters elsewhere.
But congratulations to Notts County, yes. Oxford City and Kidderminster.
Yeah, exactly. Kidderminster, that was out of left field. Oxford finished same points as Worthing, better goal difference. They finished just behind Dartford. So they were second ranked of the playoff sides. But well done to them. Yeah, they're a good team. And that McEachran guy up front, who plays up front for them, is pretty good. So well done to them. But Notts County, I was dreading, from a neutral's point of view, I was dreading the notion that a team that superior to all three of the other teams, that were involved in the playoffs, they could have missed out, and they very nearly did. They were trailing again. They conceded sixth minute, and I think it was the 87th minute when they got their late equaliser, their latest.
And then they conceded again early in extra time as well.
Yeah, and then pulled it back, eventually won on penalties, and actually comfortably, because they were, I think there were a good couple of penalties at hand ahead, which is just as well for John Bostock, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. I mean, surely you just...
He panenka'd it into the bar. All he had to do was blast it home, and that was it, done and dusted.
But then the goal scorer was the one who missed against Wrexham in that promotion 6-pointer. So
yeah, which was
quite good for him.
Yeah, because
well done. Notts County deserved it. I mean, I don't think anyone. Chesterfield obviously would be gutted, but I don't think anyone can deny that a team who got 107 points in the end or something like that deserved to go up. I mean.
I think they were 23 points ahead of Chesterfield, and Chesterfield won this team.
The last two seasons have shown it's ludicrous that there's only two promotion spots from the National League. There should be three. I don't know why they don't just cut it, change League Two to three up, three down, like it should be. I don't know why there's four up from League Two and two up from the National League. It makes zero sense.
I don't know why it ever came into being in the first place.
I think it was because of the non-league. There was like the massive non-league to league gap in the old days. And it was like kind of semi-professional teams and all that. And so only one team. And at first you had to be kind of actually voted in, didn't you? And then they got one promotion spot, which made it really hard to go up or down.
Well, it doesn't explain
luckily for us, obviously, because we would have gone down twice if it wasn't for that.
Exactly, yeah. So I'm grateful for that, for sure. But... it doesn't explain the League Two to League One scenario. Which
that's always been the case, I think, hasn't it? It's always been four up, but I don't know why League Two is special. But I would fully expect to see both Wrexham and Notts County up the top in challenging for automatic, certainly the playoffs, but probably automatic promotion next season.
I was going to say, I saw an interview with the Notts County captain, and he was talking about just the relief of having managed to get the job done. But then he was talking about what they're doing next season, and he thinks that them and Wrexham might be pushing each other head to head amongst a promotion battle. They generally think, especially not only have they got an extra promotion space, they've got two extra promotion spaces. Yeah. I genuinely think they could be amongst it. Absolutely. Yeah.
Connections there as well. Luke Williams, who's the manager, was an Albion under-23 coach, and Adam Chickson as well as plays for them.
Ryan Harley's Luke Williams' assistant as well. Yeah, so three Albion connections.
There. A plethora of Albion connections there.
Yes, well, they seem to be everywhere, don't they, these connections.
But we did have a lot of players over the years, didn't we? So.
I have to say, by the way, apparently Wrexham, lots of congratulations and praise to County as well. There's been really good relations between the clubs, apparently, with communications, especially after they got the job done. I think they were genuinely pleased for them that they'd gone up with them. And they shouldn't be, should they?
I think it's fair enough. I mean, they saw what happened last year, and it kind of. I mean, last year they didn't get even close to the points that County got, and obviously they missed out. So. Yeah, it's good to see also two quite, big clubs as well compared to, you compare them to even quite a lot of clubs in League One even, and they're huge, So it'll make it a tough league next year in League Two. And, if Bradford, for example, don't go up from the playoffs, that's another big club. Teams like Carlisle as well get decent crowds and, so it's a real, yeah, it could be an interesting fight at the top there, although the teams going down are not the huge ones, are they? Teams like Accrington and Morecambe are maybe like historically not as big and not as big a fan base.
Yeah. Meantime, Worthing will be going to Torquay United, of all teams, a team we've played many times before. That seems bizarre, doesn't it, after their relegation?
Well, Torquay being... I was thinking it was the level below, of course, yeah. Yeah, so it's interesting. Yeah, it's quite a Western feel to it, isn't it, next year? Because Truro came up, and Taunton came up.
Already in there.
Oh, yeah, and then one of the other Western teams, Barker, in there, obviously, already. And yeah. I think... Western Supermare then maybe came up or something like that again. So there's quite a few Western teams in National League South this year.
It's a bit of an anomaly because Banbury, which is in Oxfordshire, is in the northern section, which is but there we go.
Well, because I mean, it'd be even more, I think, this year, because the National League, there were three teams came down from the south. Oh, Yeovil, of course, came down as well.
Oh, right.
Yeovil, so it might Torquay be... and Maidstone all came down. So the shift may well move even further south then.
I wonder if Torquay might not... because I think Torquay and Yeovil, I'm pretty sure someone said that Worthing would be playing them next year. So
they will be, yeah. Sorry, they'll be in the southern bit, definitely, but it's a matter of who...
Maybe in the north then or something, surely not.
No, they wouldn't be in the north. It'll be someone on that line. Like Gloucester and Lowestoft have opened in the north at one point and Banbury, Oxford City were in the north at one point. Yeah.
So they'll move one of the other teams.
Yeah, one of the teams, assuming that it all shifts, one of the other teams who are further north of the furthest north of the Conference South will have a lot of very long away trips.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, congratulations to Oxford, to Notts County, and we'll see what else happens in the playoffs. Plenty more to discuss. Our next one, we're going to try and get Peter actually on from the Rebel Yell to talk about Worthing season at some point as well. But in the meantime, we've got Newcastle on Thursday, another big one. As you said, something of a free hit in a funny sort of way, but wouldn't it be brilliant if we could get at least a draw and preferably a win?
If we could win, I mean, it sounds crazy and not... Alan, who obviously was on last show, was saying jokingly about the Champions League the other day. But if we were to win at Newcastle, it's not impossible. We'd have to win at Newcastle and probably have to win our last four. But yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen. But if we did win at Newcastle, you never know. I'd be delighted with a point, to be honest, there, given the number of games. If you get a point, then that puts us too clear of Spurs and Villa and means actually against Southampton, we may only need a point if one of those two lose. Their weekend games.
Yeah, wouldn't want to rely on that, but yeah.
No, I wouldn't either, but yeah, it might mean that.
Yeah. Well, next up, I'm not going to the game, but you are going to the game, Peter.
I am, yeah.
Alan's actually bought a ticket post-match yesterday off the back of our result. He's now going
post-haste.
Newcastle, yeah. There's quite a few people going up, I think, that we know. I'm not going to be amongst them, but you are. So we'll try and do a review show at some point.
You were glad of the driving test as an excuse to...
Yeah,
to not go.
Exactly, yeah. We'll do a review in between that and the Saints game. That'll be our next one. Thank you for joining us as always, folks. And Peter, stand or fall?
Up the Albion. Sports Social Podcast Network.